welcome to another edition of Pro Money Talk. I'm Peter Johnson, and I'm soloing on the show this week because Jason's a little bit under the weather. I want to take a moment to wish you all happy holidays. Whether it's Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, Joyeux Noël, Feliz Navidad, or whatever the season's greeting is in your language, we wish you the best. We're proud to say that Pro Money Talk is now rated number 12 out of all 764 business podcasts on Apple's iTunes Music Store. Thank you to all of our listeners for making Pro Money Talk so successful. Speaking of iTunes, Apple has now added customer reviews to the podcasts on the iTunes Music Store. We would really appreciate it if you would like to take a moment, go over to the iTunes Music Store and post your comments about the show. We'd like honest comments, whatever you like about the show, what you think needs improvement, whatever you have to say would be great. To post a customer review at iTunes, you go to the iTunes Music Store, click on Podcasts, type Pro Money Talk in the search box, then click on the green Pro Money Talk logo, and then on the podcast description page, scroll down to Customer Reviews and click there. We also want to thank you for all the feedback on the audio quality on the show. We've added some new equipment and done some homework to improve the show's sound quality, and we think it's paid off. Even though today's show is a phone interview, we've been able to cut noise and keep the volume more consistent, so you won't have to continually adjust the volume if you're driving in your car or listening in a noisy environment. Please continue to let us know how we're doing. This week's show is focused on family businesses, and is specifically geared to wealth transfer planning. Our guest is Carl Barreither, author of Planning a Family and Business Legacy and Becoming a Wealth Transfer Specialist. Carl has over 30 years' experience in counseling families about finances and is a pioneer in the family wealth transfer process. Carl believes that through a process of early facilitated communication, families can attain better wealth transfer results, enjoy more successful businesses, and build stronger family bonds. During the course of the interview, Carl shares a powerful personal experience that helped shape his views and redefine his personal mission. In the interest of full disclosure, we should mention that we are involved in publishing ebook versions of Carl's print books under the Advisor Press imprint. You can learn more about Advisor Press by visiting www.advisorpress.com. And now, without further ado, is my interview with Carl. Okay, today we're joined by Carl Barreither, who is founder and president of FBR System, Inc., a family business wealth transfer planning firm, who teaches advisors how to use a holistic process to transfer wealth and renew both business and family. He's the author of two books on the subject of family business wealth transfer, Planning a Family and Business Legacy, and Becoming a Wealth Transfer Specialist. One book is meant for the consumer and one is meant for the professional. Carl holds degrees in business and communication from Northern State University in South Dakota. He graduated from Purdue University's estate planning program and has earned the Chartered Life Underwriter designation. He's been a successful financial advisor and served as training director and regional sales director for a major financial services company. Carl's an instrument-rated pilot with a multi-engine rating, studies Eastern philosophy with Western eyes, plays tennis, and travels in his motor home. He and his wife Lillian reside in Central California, and they're the parents of three children and the grandparents of four. Carl, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Joy being here.
Well, I'm pleased to have you. You and I have known each other for some time, and I think the work you do is very important, and you've got a lot of experience. You've been helping families with wealth transfer since 1969, right?
Absolutely, and it's been an interesting journey, and I really want to take this opportunity to thank the many people, the many family business owners and entrepreneurs and family members who have assisted me in my practice. I found it very, very important to listen to what people have to say about the importance of wealth transfer planning. It's been an interesting ride.
Well, Carl, you got your start in the insurance business, if I'm not mistaken.
I sure did.
And one of the things that insurance people do is help families find liquidity so that estates can remain intact through the death of the elder of the family or the business founder. So you sort of naturally fell into working with business owners who have illiquid types of estates. So can you tell us a little bit about how you got your start doing this? And
yes, I would, Peter. I started selling life insurance when I was in college, as a sophomore in college, worked my way through college selling life insurance, and was very successful. I worked primarily with family farmers and ranchers and manufacturers and wholesalers whose most of their assets were invested in the family business. And I discovered that these people have unique issues. Unlike people who have most of their assets invested in stocks or bonds, these people have their monies, their properties invested in real estate, plant, and equipment. And so the disposition of those assets is quite unlike the disposition of assets when they're liquid or near liquid.
And for our listeners who think this may get a little technical, we're actually going to be talking about the personal side of this. How do you keep the family intact? How do you keep the business intact through the transfer? And of course, in America, we have a lot of small business owners. It's really the lifeblood of the country. And so I think we're addressing an issue that affects a lot of people.
There are actually over 25 million family or closely held companies in the United States. And it's really an awesome field of endeavor. And oftentimes, when you look at the statistics of these people creating this wealth, Peter, and then passing it on successfully, the statistics, according to the Gallup poll, have indicated that only 30% of these businesses survive beyond the first generation, and only 15% survive beyond the second generation. So it seems to me, Peter, that when you look at those kind of statistics, it's deplorable that in an age where we have all this technical competence and information, why is it possible that so few businesses are successfully transferred from one generation to another? The Gallup poll family business statistics go on to say that 57% of family business owners fail to plan for the transfer of their family's wealth. 57% have done no estate planning, and 72% don't even have a buy-sell agreement. And I think that says something about why is it that these people who have spent a lifetime in making sacrifices would work so hard to create that wealth and be so dismal in terms of transferring that wealth from one generation to the next.
That's amazing, because you and I have started our own businesses, and we know how hard we work to do that. And what tremendous wealth we've created through just our longevity, staying with it. We've built up the contacts, we've built up the systems and the firm itself. And it's more than just a question of, gee, Uncle Sam took a bite out of it and we had to sell something. It's a human sacrifice. It's a human loss when the families often fall apart as well as the businesses.
And I think you've hit upon an important point. And that point is, what is the definition of wealth? What is your definition of wealth, Peter?
Well, you had that question in your workbook, and the first things that came to mind for me, number one, was health, because I know if I have my health, I can go and do what I need to do to make things right again. And secondly, for me, family, friends, and support, because I need some sense of security to know that I can take some risks and step out and try new things. And also, when I slip up or come up short, my social network is there to support me. So I need a sense of security. And, of course, I'm a financial planner, so I think healthy finances are critical, too.
Holistically, wealth transfer planning obviously needs to include the entire family, and that's especially true with entrepreneurs and capital-intensive family-owned businesses and closely held companies, because their assets, for the most part, are these fixed assets. And when they distribute these fixed assets to their family, oftentimes they create partnerships and corporations at their death. And it just appears to me, based on my many years of experience, that there's oftentimes a separation between the skills and talents it takes to create wealth and the skills and talents it takes to preserve wealth. And I think one of the questions that's important to ask is, why should that be the case? And I think part of the reason is that there's this whole issue of having open communication. Frequently, it's been my experience that business owners have created this wealth, by and large, because they have effectively created the sense of secrecy and power and control. And those are all ingredients, this ambition and secrecy, control, power, being autocratic, are all important ingredients many times to create wealth. But it just seems to me, Peter, that they oftentimes get in the way of preserving wealth. Instead of having secrecy, in the case of preserving, we need openness. And instead of having a sense of control, we need, in order to preserve it, we need to share it. And instead of having power, we need knowledge. And instead of being autocratic in terms of creating wealth, we need a sense of collaboration. And oftentimes the head and the ego are really important ingredients in creating wealth, but frequently we need to resort to the heart and the spirit in terms of the preservation. And I think what gets in the way of achieving that end oftentimes has to do with communication, the sense of being open. And what impacts being able to be open in the areas of communication, I think, has a lot to do with gender issues and generation gaps, family dynamics, and intervention strategies. And frequently, entrepreneurs and business owners have told me that why should I be going to my family? After all, it's my wealth. I should be able to determine where that wealth goes and when it goes. And I have some real sad stories that I'd like to share with your listeners.
Let me interrupt for just a second. I do want to get to the stories for sure. But what you're saying is really important, and I hope people are listening carefully. Not only do we have a personality, like sort of the Lone Ranger personality that has the power and the drive to get something started, and that person has difficulty perhaps letting go of the reins and working in a collaborative framework with their own family, but we have a system of services in the financial services industry, from the attorneys to the financial planners to the accountants, who are also used to working with the Lone Ranger, the individual client, and they're not used to the collaborative process either. So what you bring to the table is a way of bringing the team together and also the family together to communicate. So sorry for the interruption.
No, that's a good point. I just wanted to suggest that most advisors, both legal, tax, financial, and insurance advisors, I would agree with you. They've historically perceived the stakeholder, the entrepreneur, the owner, as the client in the story, and I did as well. And about half of my career, if you owned the business, I really didn't care what other family members needed and wanted. I was listening to what Peter needed and wanted.
Well, I was paying you.
Well, that's right. You were paying me. But oftentimes I discovered that even though I did exceedingly good planning for the clients, I discovered in the long run that many of these plans failed. And I hope that we have an opportunity to talk about why those plans failed. And the overall reach that I've uncovered is that frequently what the owner wants and what the family members want are not of one accord. Incidentally, this is a side note, Peter, that in the Bible, the Accord is the only automobile that is referred to in the Bible, that we all meet in one accord. Well, the Accord in this case, it seems to me, should imply that we ought to include the entire family, that stakeholders, principal owners, would make better decisions if they included their planning activities with their family members and got their feedback before they made their decisions. And I think these decisions are, the whole issue of wealth transfer planning is certainly a journey. It's not a destination. And because it is a journey, it changes from time to time. And I think it would be useful if family members were included in this process rather than waiting until the death of the principal before the family members were engaged in knowing what the wealth transfer plan is and was.
Well, for our listeners, I did a show on that very subject in regard to the normal process of estate planning in an earlier podcast that we did about the importance of communication in family wealth transfer and estate planning. So, Carl, I'd love to hear some stories. You've worked with a lot of families.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, some of these stories are sad, but I think we can all learn from other people's experiences. And I recall this one family business member that stayed on the family business while his other four or five brothers and sisters went on to do their own thing. And he attended a seminar that I did that was sponsored by a number of community banks. And during the intermission, he came up to me and he said, "Carl, I want to tell you my story." And his story went something like this. He and his father and mother were engaged in a very successful family business. In this case, it happened to be a cow-calf ranch operation in Wyoming. And he said that he had spent his entire life helping his father and mother engage in this business. And all the land was owned by the parents. And over the years, he owned part of the cattle. Before the father died, the son asked the father, you know, what his plans were. And he's, "Oh, son," he says, "don't worry about it." He says, "I've got it all taken care of. You're going to be well taken care of." So when the father eventually died, as it turned out, all the property, all the real estate was owned owned in joint tenants. So his mother then became the owner of all the real estate. And upon her subsequent death, she wanted to treat all of the children equally. So to her way of thinking, equal and fair were one and the same. So when she died, she left all the real estate equally to all five children. That means that the person who told me the story owned one-fifth. And the other family members said, "Look, we want our money in cash. We don't want it to own one-fifth interest in a capital-intensive family business that has not yielded us any kind of return." So as the tears rolled down his cheeks, he said, "Here I thought, if you can't trust your own father, who can you trust?" I thought it was really a tragedy that this man had spent his entire life, not only his life, but that of his son, who had spent 15 years on that ranch as well, only wind up that the ranch was sold to somebody who had a lot more money than the family members did, and acquired that ranch and put the son and his grandson out of business. I just can't imagine the father really wanting to make that happen. And in this particular case, the son told me that his wife was taking care of his mother, her mother-in-law, who lived in the ranch for all these many years, and she was unable to take care of herself. I don't think this should be an issue of was that right or wrong. I'm just thinking that if the father had revealed to the son before he had invested 30 years of his life with little or no revenue coming in from the business, it would have been important for the son to make an informed decision. But as it turned out, the son didn't have that information until the death of his mother, some years after the death of his father. I just can't believe that any father would want his son to say, "If you can't believe your father, who can you believe?"
And it could have been prevented had they just talked about it, and if the plan had been revealed, and then the brothers and sisters could have said, "Gee, we really don't want part of a ranch. We're going to want cash."
Exactly. And then they could have had that out. They could have sat down and discussed those issues. You know, having been in the business for 40 years, I learned a couple of things. One of the things I've learned is to listen to the clients. And so in 1980 and 81, we had an outside firm do a survey amongst our hundreds of clients in seven western states. And what the survey revealed was that the families that were responding to the survey said that although your services were of value to our family, we think that you should expand and redefine the client as the entire family, as opposed to acting as an agent only for the owner. And I said, "Well, if that's the reality, that shouldn't be difficult. I have a degree in communications. I'll bring the entire family together." And I don't know if you have any idea, Peter, what happened as a result of that. But it was a tragedy in many ways that these family members, by and large, did not see this as a safe place to say what was in their mind, much less what was in their heart. And I discovered that because it was not a safe place, over and over again, I learned that I really had to meet with each adult family member and their spouse on an individual basis, on a confidential basis, and allow them to tell me what they think of their family, what they think of their business, and what they think of the future of that business, so that I could create a true wealth transfer report that was a reflection of what the family needed and wanted. And all too frequently, I discovered that all advisors, be they legal, tax, financial, or insurance advisors, are listening only, as I did, I might add, only to the owner. And I think it's really useful for the owner to have the feedback from the family members. And there were a couple of instances where I had a family patriarch and matriarch tell me that they would want me to visit with their sons, but not with their daughter-in-laws. Mm. They had three sons. And I said, why would you want to exclude the daughter-in-laws? Oh, well, we never know, the high divorce rate, and we don't want in-laws to become outlaws. And if they don't know, that's really a whole lot better. And I said, well, when will these daughter-in-laws, in your mind's eye, really be part of the family? How many years did they have to be married? How many grandchildren do they have to provide? Well, we don't know, but we just don't want them involved. And I finally concluded that if I can't include the entire family in this process that includes the in-laws, then it doesn't seem to me that I'm really providing a very worthwhile service. So what I've learned to do in subsequent years, so the last half of my career, where I've identified the client as the entire family, by having engaged in these one-on-one meetings with the children and the adult grandchildren and their spouses, I really had a real sense of not only what the entrepreneur wanted, the patriarch and matriarch wanted, but I wanted to check to see what the children needed and wanted. It was really an opportunity for me to create a wealth transfer report that was really a reflection of what the family wanted. And I opened the areas of communication. And what I discovered was that following the individual meeting and the preparation of the report, we would do a family retreat, which would be held in some nice location, a resort area, where we would spend either a day or 2 days or 2.5 days discussing this report. But before we discussed the report, Peter, I asked three very simple questions of the assembled adult family members and their spouses. The first question is, I'd like to know what each of you think, what your expectancy for this retreat might be, and I would record those responses on the board. The second question was, what is it that you admire about your family and business? And I have discovered over the years that many times the families really remember those things that don't go well. And I remember a particular person up in San Jose who owned a meatpacking company, the grandfather. When he heard his grandchildren tell the entire group assembled about why they really admired their grandfather, because he took all these risks and they are now in a position of economic financial security because he made those risks, he said, in all the years I've never heard my grandchildren tell me that. And the tears from his eyes just flowed. And I said, what a beautiful expression that we were able to find a moment and time in history to share that during life. And the third question is, what is it that you'd like to change about your family and or business? And we recorded those areas. And ideally, the wealth transfer report should really be a reflection of what those people told me individually, and then find a plan, a method, by which we could accomplish all those objectives and allow the principles to reflect upon the wishes of the family members. And it just seemed to me that holistically, we're really leaving a legacy that doesn't take place at death, but a legacy that takes place in the moment, in the now.
And there's
and
a chance to
frequently those legacies aren't really in place until the death, and when it's centered around secrecy and power and control, and manipulation, I don't think that's the legacy, Peter, that entrepreneurs really want to leave.
Well, you don't leave much of a legacy at all with just a single document. It's the interactions over a lifetime that have a greater impact, and preparing people for whatever is coming, whether it's a great gift or if you're going to give it all to charity, gives the family time to prepare as well.
So you really... I could agree with you more, Peter, and I think it's really unfortunate that these advisors who work with these entrepreneurs and closely held companies and family businesses, why it is that they can't learn the skills to go beyond the individual and see the family as the true client.
Well, I wish I had an answer to that, but I think it is largely momentum and custom and those gender issues you talked about. In traditional society, oftentimes it was the man who took care of the money and the woman was not seen as playing a role in that. There are just a lot of biases and momentum, and then people are busy, especially families that own businesses. And you may have a black sheep in the family that nobody wants to deal with. And so there's this, I'm sure there are lots of reluctance. All of this brings me to a question that's been on my mind for a couple of days. And I know you're a professional. You work with families. You help train financial professionals how to use your overall system, the 9-step system, to bring about this sort of miraculous working together. It's so different than what is traditional and what's been done in the past. Do you think it takes a professional, or do you think a family can pull this together on their own?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. In the book that I wrote, Planning a Family and Business Legacy, I thought that I could write a book that would help families not only understand the issues, but hopefully help families understand how they could, in fact, be this facilitator at this family retreat. And one of the things I discovered in that, for me, that reality is that all the family members have a vested interest in the results. And so I think oftentimes what it really takes is a professional. And that professional has to be trained, not only as understanding the reality of the technical aspects of it, but the family and relationship aspects of it. And therefore, I find that many advisors don't know how to do that. So I think it's important to find someone who has the skills to act as a facilitator, someone who can act as a mediator, and someone who has technical competence to take that information and create a report. And not only create the report, but once there's a consensus that that report is a reflection of the needs and wants of that family, can then assist in implementation of that report. And so I've concluded that it really requires a professional facilitator. And when I say a professional facilitator, Peter, I'm not talking about someone who is transaction-oriented. I'm talking about someone that can go beyond transaction and listen to what each family member wants and needs, and then create a report that is a reflection of what the family needs and wants. I'm reminded of a particular family up in southern Oregon, where when I visited with the entire family, I discovered that although the family had a very successful business, the only son in this family was a person, when I met with him individually, really wasn't interested in the continuation of the family business. He had an interest that was very, very different. And I guess I was probably the only person that he ever told this to, that what he really wanted to do is he really wanted to buy and own construction equipment and heavy equipment and do contractor's work, which was really outside the purview of the family-owned business. And in this particular family, the father and mother were recovering alcoholics, and they insisted that their children and no one on this family-owned business premises could own or could bring or carry or consume any alcoholic beverages. One day the father told me, he says, Carl, what do you think of the idea of my requiring my son, periodically, to have a test, a urine test, to determine whether or not he, in fact, is on any kind of alcohol or drugs? And I said, well, that's certainly your prerogative, but what do you think it will do to the level of trust And he said, well, my wife and I are recovering alcoholics, and we just don't want our family members to be engaged in that. And lo and behold, he took it upon himself to do these drug tests secretively, discovered that his son did have some drugs in his urine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's no small wonder then that the son was asked to leave, and the son wound up actually owning the kind of construction equipment that was important for him to have, and he went ahead and built his own business in spite of the fact that father and mother were very, very unhappy at the fact that he wasn't going to be engaged in the business. But sometimes what the family, what the entrepreneurs, the patriarch and matriarch want are not in accord with what the children want. And isn't it better for the family to know that going in rather than knowing that going out? And in this case, the son is flourishing in his little business, and the parents have recognized that their thought of leaving this business intact to their family, they've got to change what it is they want to do with that family-owned business. But isn't it better to know that now than to discover that 10, 15, 20 years down the road when the family members really don't want the business?
Absolutely. Well, it seems to me that a person who's going to facilitate or mediate this process with families would have to have a certain maturity and quite a bit of experience and exposure to the different disciplines that are involved. You've got accountants, and you'd have to have probably a person from each major discipline. You'll have to have an attorney to draw up documents eventually, the will, the trust, the durable powers of attorney, and so on. You've got to have the accountant. You may have to have some kind of business consultant or valuation person in there. So this person who is the facilitator and brings the family together has to understand at least a lot of these different roles and bring a maturity of understanding people and a strength to be able to stand their ground and not get caught up in it, I imagine.
Yes, and that really suggests then that what the attorney or the accountant or the insurance or securities representative, rather than being transaction, that is selling the trust, even though a trust may be needed, or selling an annuity, or selling a different form of business organization, they're all part of the implementation phase. But it seems to me that we need to, as advisors, we need to get beyond the transaction and deal with the process. And when I'm talking about the process, I'm really talking about a consultative opportunity. And I think for people that really want, advisors who really want to be objective, they need to charge for the time and their skill and expertise in delivering that type of service, which goes beyond the delivering of implementing tools, whether they be trusts or products or different kinds of business organizations, to achieve that end. In order to do that, it seems to me that one really has to be an effective listener and acknowledge that you add value and that you don't have to go out and sell a product in order necessarily to assist them, although products may be very important in this process. Before we get to the products, it seems to me that we have to have an understanding of what the objectives of the family, what the objectives of the owners are, and what the objectives of the children and grandchildren, adult grandchildren are. And I think it's from that that we can create a report that is a reflection. But in order to move from this transaction orientation to the process, there are some skills that are needed, and that's the purpose of writing the book, Becoming a Wealth Transfer Specialist, to assist advisors in A, recognizing the value of moving beyond the transaction and looking at objectives apart from the property objectives. And I'm not suggesting that they're not important, but it seems to me that holistically, you, as you indicated earlier, you have to bring and blend the property issues with the relationship issues to really have a fine-tuned opportunity to be of assistance in transferring wealth. And all too frequently, advisors don't have that skill.
Well, Carl, you're speaking to the choir here, because for 15 years, we've been fee-only financial advisors ourselves. And it's a great joy and comfort to me to be able to listen to what clients want and give them the comfort that since they're the only ones paying me, I have no agenda other than to fulfill their dreams and their goals and to give them information that's going to be useful. And if I want to keep my job with them, I've got to show them real value and it has to stand up over time. And if I'm coming in with the attitude of trying to sell a financial product, that I'm coloring the whole process and I'm not really able to listen to that. I'm trying to steer it in a certain direction.
And I couldn't agree with you more, Peter. The value here is to sit down and be an effective listener. And I think many advisors have been brought into this or brought themselves into this business, whether it be tax, legal, financial, or insurance, with the understanding that they're going to tell the story. They're going to tell people how to save taxes. And I'm not suggesting that taxes aren't important, but it just seems to me that it needs to go beyond the tax issues. And one way to do that is to be an effective listener. And I think there's too little of that going on in the advisory world today.
Let me expand a little bit on that term, fee only. I'm in the business and I know what that means. Our listeners may not. Fee only is a term that's used in financial services to mean that, as I said, the only people paying us are the client. We don't make any money from recommending a particular mutual fund or an insurance policy. There's nothing really wrong with that per se, and fee only isn't the only way to work. But what's important is that the person who is servicing the family or the client needs to put the client's needs first. And a fee-only person's kind of in an easier starting point or an easier position to do that because they're only being paid for advice and they are not attached to what direction the client chooses to take.
Yeah, I would agree. But I think it's equally important, however, to acknowledge the value of the implementation phase.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes the implementation phase requires products, various products, trusts, wills, insurance policies, annuities, different forms of business organizations. And I think it's equally important to be able to focus on making sure that that implementation takes place. But before the implementation can take place, Peter, it seems to me that we have to focus more on the process.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Carl, because there, a fee-only person might help a family put together a great plan, but they may not have much incentive to actually get it done, and that could be it's you might as well have not done the work to begin with.
Both are important.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So do you have an example of a success story where a family, you know, has made a transition?
Yes, I'm glad you asked me that question.
We've got to hear some good news here.
Yes, I'm gonna tell you a story. In Central California, this is a very successful family business with two son-in-laws, and their daughters were engaged in this business with the parents. And there was a daughter who was not involved in the business. And I was asked if I could be of some assistance in preserving this family business. And in the process, I listened to these two son-in-laws. And this is a family-owned business. In this case, it was a dairy and a large dairy operation. And both of the son-in-laws had married the daughters of the owners, and so they were very much engaged in the operation of the business. One of the son-in-laws was involved in the farming part of the business, and the other was in the milking part of the business. And when I visited with each of these son-in-laws, I discovered that they had not talked to each other for 6 years. Although they lived and worked in the same vicinity, they just were unhappy with each other.
Mm.
And the mother told me in one of the interviews I had with her that she could tell how badly things or how well things went in that day by how often her husband would turn in bed. And I said, well, I don't understand. What's the relationship? And she says, well, each of the son-in-laws talks to my husband, but they don't talk to each other. And when we have Thanksgiving or Christmas, both of the son-in-laws sit at the opposite on the same side of the table so they don't even have to look at each other. And can you imagine the emotional scars that resulted in?
Yeah.
So what I did is, after I got that kind of information, I suggested in the report that this family business should not remain as it is. And I suggested that, based on the information I got from each of these two son-in-laws, the one son-in-law really wanted to move out of state and create his own dairy, and subsequently moved to Wisconsin, he and his wife. And the other son-in-law did not want to be part of this large dairy, but rather wanted to have a smaller dairy. And so he took the money from the cows he had from this large dairy and put it into a small dairy, and the other son-in-law moved into Wisconsin and created his own small dairy, leaving the parents with this large dairy with the help of neither of their son-in-laws. So how can that be a happy story? Well, the mother did not see this as a happy story. She said, my grandchildren now are in Wisconsin, Carl. What have we done here? And I said, well, let this shake out in time. A year and a half later, she said, that's the best thing that could have ever happened, that these two boys were never intended to work together. My husband and I are a whole lot happier. We hired other people, management people, to come in. We have none of the problems that we had previously. The dairy is doing very well. We're doing a lot more traveling than we ever have done. We go to Wisconsin several times a year to see our daughter and grandchildren, our son-in-law. They're more happy. And the legacy there was to sit down for this family and decipher, was the objective of keeping this particular family business intact, was that the objective that was shared by all? And in this case, it was not. So the best thing that could have happened is that acknowledging that reality and let everyone do their own thing. And now the home place has been sold. The parents have the money. Each of the son-in-laws have their own dairy. And that's a success story. Sometimes the success is that the family business should not be kept intact. But that's part of the process. And no matter what the tax implications were, that family business was not meant to stay intact if you really value family relationships.
Wow. So it sounds like it takes some courage to enter into this process.
Well, it depends on what type of legacy the parents want to leave. Mm-hmm. If the parents don't care what the family members need and want, then the family members' interests should not be in a concern. I just don't believe at some deep level that no parent or grandparent wants to leave that type of legacy.
Well, that's an opening for your story if you'd like to share it.
Well, I grew up in a generation where children were to be seen and not heard. And I guess I recognized over the years that I was listening to my children, but with a half a heart. And in the case of my daughter, our youngest, she had this sense that it was really important for her to smell the flowers. And I tried to impress upon her the importance of planting flowers. And at the time, she lived in Sacramento. And I remember our last conversation that we had. She said, Dad, you need to spend more time smelling the flowers. And I said, Carla, you need to spend more time planting the flowers. And Carla reminded me that there are many wildflowers in the fields. Especially in California, we know what those wildflowers look like. And that was the last conversation I had with my daughter. Some weeks later, we discovered that our daughter had committed suicide. And I said to myself, she was 23 years of age, suffered from bipolar illness. And I said to myself, why would she do that? And I soon learned that that question, why, was irrelevant. The fact is that she did it. And the real important thing is, what was the legacy? What legacy did she really leave me? And the legacy that Carla left me was, be sure that all family members, all children, all grandchildren, thoughts and values are appreciated. You can't do that unless you can create that sense of dialogue. And sometimes the dialogue really requires a disinterested third party to act as that facilitator. And the legacy that Carla left me was the opportunity to tell my story to other people to make sure that their children are heard. And whether or not their children's ideas and thoughts should become a reality or not is really not as important as it is for them to their ability to express their points of view. And over the last half of my career, I heard more than once how interested the children and grandchildren were and the in-laws were that the, the family business thought enough of their points of view that they wanted to pay someone to listen to their points of view to include that in a process of wealth transfer planning. And that's the kind of legacy that Carla left me, and in some sense, hopefully, I'm able to leave others. That the value of the parents and the value of the children and the value of the grandparents as a family, they're all important. So why wait until death to listen to each other? And it seems to me so important that the sense of having an open communication with all the family members during life is really important, and that wealth truly is more, it is property, but it's more than property, it's family relationships. And with that thought in mind, I think these statistics that we talked about of whether the family business should remain intact or not should be decided during life, not at death.
You know, there's nothing I can add to that story that says it all, and I really appreciate you sharing that with us. And I also want to acknowledge you for being a pioneer who has gone against the grain of the traditional financial services industry. You've had to train people. You've had to educate families in the possibility of a different way of approaching this whole question of wealth transfer. And I know that the rewards have been great. And someday this will become the norm. And today it's still rather rare. But I appreciate you being on the show. I think if that hasn't touched a few hearts and opened a few eyes, I'd be very surprised. I'd like to let our listeners know where they can find out more about you. We're going to put some information about Carl and how to reach him on the show notes on the Pro Money Talk website at promoneytalk.com. And if you want to reach Carl, he has a website, www.fbrsystem.com. So it's www.fbrsystem.com. You can reach him through email at carl@fbrsystem.com. And is it okay if I give out your phone number too?
Surely.
He's at area code 805-595-2089. He also offers, in addition to the books, which are available on Amazon and through his own website, the book for the consumers and for the professionals, he occasionally offers trainings and seminars, both for professionals and families who are interested in exploring this process. I don't know anybody who's got more experience or has given it more thought than Carl and has really created a gift for the industry in his structure, and his trainings and his tools. So as we discussed earlier, I think it takes an exceptional person with a lot of experience and knowledge and understanding of people and the issues involved to do a good job. So I would look, if I were my own business, I would look for an elder or an experienced person like Carl to do it for me. I know that there are people in his network that can do it as well. So Carl, thank you so much for spending time with us and being on our podcast.
Well, thank you for having me. I enjoyed it.
Love it, and we'll have you back again.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Carl. By the way, FBR stands for Family and Business Renewal. As always, please feel free to email your questions and comments, including audio files if you are technologically inclined, to promoneytalk@gmail.com and visit our website at www.promoneytalk.com, where you can leave comments or you can sign up for our newsletter, which will keep you posted on our shows. So until next time, happy holidays, and here's to your success.